Light just continues to shine whatever we're going through as the hours pass and Zazen becomes Kinhin and Kinhin becomes Zazen and Zazen becomes service and service becomes lunch. And meanwhile, the light just shines beneficently, unchangingly, compassionately. Pouring over us, whether we appreciate it or not. I just wanted to mention one other biographical note about Keizan Zenji, our commentator. He was born in what was then called Echizen Province, now called Fukui Ken, near Eheji. This is where Eheji was, so he was born very close to Eheji and where the Soto Zen was just beginning. And so that's where he went to practice. If he was born somewhere else, he might have gone to some other temple and he might not have been a Soto Zen ancestor. Or maybe he had some intuitive calling to, he would have traveled across the world to go to Echizen province, but seems unlikely. And then he basically lived in that area his whole life. All the temples he established, several different monasteries and temples he established were all in that same area. Maybe not right in that province, but all in that very small area of Japan. The Noto Peninsula was part of it. And in those days, that was somewhat unusual. People would travel. Japan's not that big a country anyway. People would travel around to visit various places. And also in those days when Zen was just beginning, people would often go to China to practice, to find the source of Zen, to look for what seemed to be the authentic source, as because it was such a new thing in Japan. But Keizan never did that, never left the area, never went to China, and yet he's like one of our most important ancestors. So I think that's a positive encouragement, that it's not necessary to travel far and wide to find the way. Just enter the practice where we are. And now returning to the story at hand of Qing Yuan, whose name, by the way, Qing Yuan or Seigen means green source. Green source. And Gyoshi is like practice intention. Gyo can mean practice, it also can mean walking. Walking intention. Practice intention. But green source, there's something about like his simple straightforwardness that's like a green blade of grass just rising up in its simplicity in the spring without any special effort. So this is a story about green source, Qing Yuan. There aren't so many stories about him, but there's one in the Book of Serenity. A very short, sweet, simple story. Case number 5 is Qing Yuan and the Price of Rice. A monk asked Qing Yuan, "What is the great meaning of Buddha Dharma?" And Qing Yuan said, "What is the price of rice in Luling?" The end. didn't say, well, the Four Noble Truths are like this. First you practice understanding suffering, and then you practice relinquishing the origin of suffering and realizing the cessation of suffering and practicing the way. What's the great meaning of Buddha Dharma? What's the price of rice in Luling? I think apparently he lived in this area called Luling. The commentary says, Qingyuan was a man who didn't even practice the Noble Truths. It quoted the earlier story here. Yet he makes it an ordinary encounter, looking back and asking, what's the price of rice in Luling? Some say the price of rice in Luling cannot be assessed. But by saying that, they hardly realize that they've already entered into bushels and pecks and set up shop. Do you want to be able to avoid entering this company of bushels and pecks? Ask of Chantone, the collector of this koan collection. His verse says, and you might have heard this verse, I think it's one of the wonderful verses in the Book of Serenity. The accomplishing work of great peace has no sign. The family way of the peasants is most pristine. Only concerned with village songs and festival drinking, how would they know the virtues of Shun or the benevolence of Yao? Shun and Yao are these ancient sage kings of way, way ancient China that were like known as like the epitome of virtuous rulers. And they did just live this simple life, and they were only lived for the people. So they're like these archetypes of like the selfless ruler, perfect virtue and conduct, right? So this is saying this accomplishing work of great peace is our practice. It has no sign. We might also say it has no stages. Or if there are stages, the stages have no signs. The family way of the peasants is most pristine. It's like literally the house wind, the kafu of the peasants, which is like a style of a certain tradition. So this family style, this style of the house of the peasants, not of Rinzai or Soto or anything like that. The peasant way is most pristine, pure. Only concerned with village songs and festival drinking, how would they know of the virtues of Shun or the benevolence of Yao? Or why would they need to bother with the benevolence of these old Chinese kings? They could care less. It's not that their way is already perfectly pure. They just, when someone comes to buy the rice, they just say, well, this is the going rate in Luling. Would you like some? The great intention of Buddha Dharma. So I think it just very succinctly demonstrates the character of Qingyuan. In one of those few stories we have about him, all he has to say about Buddha Dharma, besides he doesn't even practice the Four Noble Truths, is what's the price of rice in Luling? The price of rice in Luling is extremely profound and mysterious. The virtue of Shun, the benevolence of Yao, their sincerity had natural influence. Could festival drinking and village songs be a match for that? The moon is white, the wind is pure, each rests in its own lot. Do you understand? Then return to the hall. I'd say, yeah, I understand. It's so simple. Okay, then return to the Zendo and sit. And that's the end of his commentary. It's kind of like the talk's done. Let's continue. And I'd like to thank Beata for bringing up that story. I had completely forgot about this completely connected story. Several generations later, with Dongshan and Yunyan, his teacher. It seems like as Zen in this golden age, when these first ancestors were starting, word got around about these stories. It seems like it must have been just an amazing time to live. Like, there are all these people practicing Zen, and which was this new thing, and even without the internet, people were like traveling around and like, you're not going to believe what they said at, you know, Qinglan's place and so on. And they were telling these stories, and it became the family style. And we celebrate the fruits of that special time in China still. So as Beata quoted this earlier, here's this translation. Dongshan said to Yunyan, I have some habits that are not yet eradicated. Which is kind of like saying, and what should I do about these habits? It's another version, we could say, of this question of, well, how can I not fall into stages? It's kind of implying, too, that that I've already worked with a lot of my habits, but I have some habits. Sounds pretty good, right? I just have some habits that are not yet eradicated, or that I haven't worked through these issues. It's kind of like, I've been practicing and I've reached all these great stages of practice, but how can I now not fall into them or get stuck in them? Very similar question. And Yunyan said, just like in the previous story, well, what have you been doing? And Dongshan said, I have not even practiced the Four Noble Truths. And Yunyan said, are you joyful yet? And Dongshan said, here, it's not that I'm not joyful. It's as if I've found a bright pearl in a pile of shit. Which is one of those classic images, actually, of Buddha nature. This concealed, bright, shining jewel, always flawless and, unmuddied, but it's completely buried, surrounded by mud, or even more extreme, pile of shit. It's not that I'm not joyful. It's like finding a precious jewel, bright jewel, in this messy pile. So not so much a matter of reaching a bunch of stages. In this case, interestingly, it's a similar kind of question here. It's like he's got some problem, but then in the end, he just like kind of like presents that like there's no problem. They both have that same kind of setup, don't they? Like, how can I not fall into stages? And he says, well, if I don't even practice the Noble Truths, how could I fall into stages? It's like he answers his own question. And here too, it's like, well, there's some habits I haven't yet worked through. But still, it's not that I'm not joyful because I found this pile. I found this jewel in this pile. We could say the remaining habits are actually working with the pile as, And what's the pile's relationship to the bright pearl in the center? And then we have another story here, also recorded by Kazan in this short little 10 koan collection he put together. And it looks like it's a different story here, unless something got lost in translation. But this is now a monk asks Jinyuan, Seigen Gyoshi, what work does not fall into stages, or how can I avoid falling into stages? So he asks the same question that his teacher asked, probably knowing about that story at this time. And Seigen answers, instead of saying, well, what have you been doing? He goes, jumps right into, even the noble truths are not practiced. Which is his own response, right, from earlier times. So first, earlier, Seigen asked the sixth ancestor, how can I not fall into stages? What have you been doing? Well, I don't even practice the noble truths. Now a monk asks Seigen, how can I not fall into stages? And Seigen says, even the noble truths are not practiced. He just wants to keep it short. Instead of asking what his practice is, just straightforward, the end. And the monk bowed. But then Kazan's comments here, very short comments on this story. The place clear, the time obvious. There are no stages or tracks. Leave it to fate. Leave it to fate. Always like this. Fate or destiny. If you would understand the words, even the noble truths are not practiced, you should seek out the intent of this verse. Ultimately, how is it? A patch-robed monk sits with shrouded head, not knowing of cool or warmth. Investigate. Or as Edjo said, just sit grandly under the eaves. So the interesting here, that, isn't it, that the commentary on what is this realm of no stages? Leave it to fate. Leave it to fate. Always like this. So in Buddha Dharma, what is fate or destiny? Anyone have a sense of what that would be? Yes.
To me, it seems that every present moment is perfected. There are myriad causes and conditions which make this moment. That is fate.
Fate is the way the present moment comes to us perfectly as it is. Leave it up to that. Yeah. Leave it all up to that. Destiny. Any other thoughts on fate or destiny? Because often I think fate and destiny are spoken of as some higher order, some cosmic wheels that predetermine how things go, some controller beyond our knowledge that's calling the shots. In Dharma, we don't have such a thing.
No, I would just say there's a common way to look at fate that is exclusive of freedom. And that's very different than what arises in the moment being fate. But it's not like this projected into the future idea of fate, which I think is a common understanding.
Yeah. The present is the perfection of the present. We could even say they're synonyms, maybe, as Johnny was implying, that the present moment is actually perfection, kind of by definition, because it's what comes to us inevitably due to the myriad conditions. So the myriad conditions aligned just so, producing this in a moment-to-moment way, could also be said to be destiny or fate. Myriad conditions are not in our control, and yet it's not at all random. Well, I broke my toe, or I won the lottery, or whatever. It was just destiny or fate, like a most random chance. Good luck, we might even say. But Buddha Dharma would not accept good luck, I don't think. It's more that there's always, everything arises dependent on very particular conditions, and we can't see them, and when we can't see what they are, we call it luck. And it's not a matter of trying to see them, but it is a matter of trusting that everything must be just so according to conditions. And the next moment it will be just so according to a new set of conditions.
So what would you say about karma? Is it different than fate?
I think very similar. Karma, as I understand, it's like karma is a subset of like all these conditions. There's all the conditions creating this moment, but that's not just karma. Karma is a big part of it for a sentient being. Karma is like a big thing that we're working with. It is conditions. And yet there's other things like earthquakes happening, which are not karmic. That's just like the workings of the earth, because karma has to do with sentient beings with intentions. So we have like the cause and effect and conditionality of karma, which is all our intentional actions of body, speech, and mind. And then that's, you know, within this larger arena of myriad conditions, like stars moving through space, and leaves falling from trees, and waves washing up on the beach and back. Those are not karmic, and yet they're conditioned. So I think leave it to fate or destiny, we could say. Yeah, leave it to the workings of karma, which we can't actually control. The Buddha was really into teaching like the law of karma is like this infallible law. We can't control it yet, but the whole practice is about working within this law. We could say the confinements of this law, like, oh, well, let's see if I can like fool this law by like really hurting somebody and like being happy afterwards. You know, it's like, well, you couldn't even try, but it's, we might be happy for a little while, but eventually there's going to be a painful effect of that. So leave it to our own karma and leave it to the workings of the whole universe.
A little bit of there's kind of this tone of passivity rather than kind of like neat. That's what I would meet that perfection.
That sounds good. Meet it.
Awake.
And leave it can sound a little passive. I think there's times when veering towards that side may be okay in situations like Sashin, where there's not much we have to do. Still, meeting is a good way to talk about it, I think. But as Edjo said in that Treasury of Light piece, is like, be like someone completely dead. That can also sound kind of passive and not recommended for, when you have to accomplish some important task in the world. But at times when our task is just to be still and drop into this, we can hear such instructions. There was another verse here that we'll actually probably get to later in Sashin.
Could you read again how faith was used in the commentary?
Yeah, so this is Keizan commenting on this story, saying, the place clear, the time obvious, here and now, there are no stages or tracks. Leave it to fate, leave it to fate, always like this. And then he quotes this verse that will come a little later in the story, a few generations later, about Shurto and Yaoshan. So Shurto made this verse in praise of Yaoshan, and he quotes it here because it's about this issue. Though we've been dwelling together, I don't know his name. Abandoned to fate or destiny, we go along as ever. Even the great sages, since the remote past, do not know him. How could the later rabble understand him? So this is, maybe this brings out this other dimension of meeting, because we go along as ever. We're practicing together. It's not that there's nothing happening, but we go along in this, in accord with the destiny of conditionality. Intimately practicing together.
Yes. So is that the relationship of the pile of shit to the pearl?
Which one? What relationship?
Going along. There's something you just barely said, going along and practicing intimately.
Yeah, not knowing.
The conditions, not knowing.
Mm-hmm. That could be a way to work with the pile of habits, but finding, staying in touch with, appreciating this pearl at the center, or as in this Sashin, speaking of that pearl as this light. The inconceivable, invisible light, the more we appreciate that, the more the pile that surrounds it is workable. Right? Going along with, in a way, we could say that pile it's the pile of destiny. It's like finding this bright jewel in a pile of destiny, or in a pile of fate, in a pile of karmic action and a pile of karmic results. And we'll go along with the karmic action and results with more and more appreciation of the pearl in the center, and it actually transforms the destiny. So we left off in Kazan's commentary of Yunnan called this the two sicknesses of the Dharmakaya. In truth, this results from not passing completely through this situation. I had the image of passing completely through this pile of shit. However, Jingyuan not only just acknowledged his original nature, he penetrated this barrier. The ancestor asked, "Into what stage will you end up?" "In this deep, secluded place, there is no inside or outside after all. In this deep, final realm, not even a knife or axe can separate it." This deep, secluded place of no inside and outside is what stage will you end up in? The what stage. Therefore, he asked, what stage can there be? Totally penetrating this realm, unclouded, he penetrated it totally. He said, if I have not even practiced the Four Noble Truths, what stage can there be? So, Kazan's praising Jingyuan's statement, what stage can there be, as like an all-inclusive statement that penetrates this realm of no inside or outside. Even if you try to establish a class or stage, there are no boundaries in the sky right from the start. Where can you build stairs? So, yeah, the classic examples like Patrick mentioned earlier, like, for example, the 4 or 8 jhanas, deeper levels of concentration, the 10 bodhisattva bhumis. Buddha Dharma has many lists of stages, traditionally, of practice. And yet, looking at this, what's the, behind all those stages, what's the basis? We could say it's just light. And in fact, particularly with these bodhisattva stages, even though they're described like a progression, more and more shit is being washed away, less and less grasping, and more and more subtle situations, still, it's like the light is not more in Buddhas and less in sentient beings. Like the light doesn't change through these stages. So from the perspective of the light, it's a little bit silly to even look at stages. Like the light is exactly the same. It's not like it gets brighter. So, or the pearl in the center of the pile is exactly the same. It's just that we're working through this pile around it. I think it's easy when hearing this kind of thing to think, well, but so what? No, there's this inconceivable something that we actually can't say anything about. We can't see it directly. If we go try to like go to the source of it, we'll be burned to ash. So why not just forget about that and work with the mud? In fact, it is a matter of working with the mud, but this opening more and more to this light, appreciating this more and more, makes the muddy work maybe just joyful. There are no boundaries in the sky right from the start. Where can you build stairs in the sky? Those who understand this realm of emptiness literally have since ancient times, fallen into a view that all things are empty and arrive at an understanding that the myriad things are non-existent. So I also think of this teaching of the three turnings of the Dharma wheel that's in this new newsletter. And this second turning of the Dharma wheel is about negation. It's like the Heart Sutra wheel. It's like not finding anything at all. Vast emptiness. So those who understand this realm of emptiness literally, I don't know if literally is exactly the right word here, but they like take it at face value. Like there's no eyes, no ears, no nose, and so on. They fall into a view that all things are empty, and they arrive at an understanding that the myriad things are non-existent. So whether this is nihilism, nihilistic non-existence, or even a correct view of emptiness according to the second turning of the Dharma wheel, where the really like nothing is established, it's the relinquishment of all reference points. In either case, it's like there's nothing there that we can get a hold of. Since Jinyuan cried out, "I have not even practiced the noble truths," how could he remain in the emptiness of things? Is this because he cried it out? Look carefully. This bright, empty realm is brighter than the rising sun. So I hear this also as now this is the shift into this third turning. And excuse me for continuing this, framing things in terms of these turnings of Dharma wheel. But I feel so much that Kazon is really this like presenting all throughout this transmission of light is, and it's not just me feeling this, but maybe to put it exactly this way, maybe my way of talking about it is that he's coming from this third turning place. He's constantly talking about this, not just negation, but this bright clarity. This light, empty but bright and clear and aware. The Heart Sutra doesn't talk about this bright, clear awareness. But Kazon often does. So here he's kind of criticizing those since ancient times who have fallen into a kind of negation view of emptiness. He's saying, look carefully, this bright, empty, it is empty, but it's bright. Bright, empty realm is brighter than the rising sun. Even though this vast, marvelous, true nature is not an object of discrimination, it possesses complete, perfect, clear understanding. It's like Buddha wisdom. It's an understanding. It's not just like space. Though it's not bound by bones and marrow, it has a bright body that's not covered or hidden. This body cannot be discerned through motion or stillness, nor can its knowing be discerned through ordinary awareness and understanding. Since ordinary knowing is also this wisdom, motion and stillness are nothing else than this. It can't be discerned by ordinary awareness, but ordinary awareness is it. This very mind cannot understand Buddha. This very mind itself is Buddha. Or, you are not it. In truth, it is you. Sentient beings don't have Buddha nature. Buddha nature has sentient beings. Even bodhisattvas who reach the 10th stage by stages still do not see Buddha nature really clearly. Why? The Buddha said, because they postulate an essence of things and establish practices apart from ordinary activities, they do not see Buddha nature clearly. Because for Buddhas there are ultimately no practices and no realm of essence, they see Buddha nature thoroughly. Bodhisattvas on these stages, that's the problem, is that they're on these stages. The Buddha is beyond the 10th bhumi. The Buddha is no longer on the bodhisattva stages. So the Buddha is Buddha nature fully revealed and exposed. In the 8th book of the Parinirvana Sutra, in the chapter Awakening of the Tathagata Nature, it says, although innumerable bodhisattvas are endowed with all the perfections and practice these 10 stages, they still are unable to see their own Buddha nature. The Buddha has consequently said that their views are deficient. Thus, good sons and daughters, the bodhisattva on the 10th stage still does not clearly know or see Buddha nature. So how much less are the Shravakas or Prajeka Buddhas able to see it? With no reliance on seeing and hearing, and with no reliance on an external world or use of the thinking mind, just try to look beneath them. That's Kazan now. The sutra ended. Kazan says, with no reliance on seeing and hearing, and with no reliance on an external world or use of the thinking mind, just try to look beneath them. There will surely be an unexpected realization of an alert knowing not gotten from someone else.
When he says beneath them,
seeing and hearing, and an external world, or the thinking mind, basically everything, we could say. Yeah, try to look beneath them. Yeah, what's beneath? Beneath them or behind them. Right, we have that phrase, turn the light of awareness around and shine it back at what's behind the objects. Or there's the light is shining on us, illuminating us as objects, and we're looking at the objects, but then like look at the light that's illuminating the objects. Like that same as turning the light around. Look at the light that's illuminating the objects, but we've heard that it's invisible. So we can't look at it as an object. We're open to the light that illuminates objects. Or with the thinking mind that's actually creating objects, look back to the source of the thinking mind. What's the source from where the thoughts are just continually bubbling up, turning the light around, sometimes translated as tracing back the radiance. So the the radiance of this clear, bright awareness is like shining out, and it's like illuminating the world. And but then we take the illuminated world to be like what's happening. So it's kind of like there's the radiance going outward, and it's like tracing back the radiance to the source. But again, with this sun metaphor, it's like if you actually try to get a hold of that source, it's like go to the center of the sun. It's we can't. Like in our lineage, Dongshan says, turning away, just forgetting, turning away, you could say, towards objects or touching, going back to try to actually grasp the source, are both wrong, because that source is like a massive fire. So we can't touch the massive fire, we get totally burned. But if we turn away from it towards the objects it illuminates, then we're just stuck in a world of objects and churned about. Which being churned about is could be okay. Go along with destiny. Destiny is kind of like being churned about. But if we're churned about circling around the light, the pearl in the center, then the churning is kind of like just going for a river ride on the rapids. Now, can you add some word to this story? Reaching this realm, if you can add a word to this story, you will make the tongueless one speak. If you can hear this principle, you will make the deaf one hear at once, and make that person nod, speak, and laugh. Would you like to add a word to the story? Kazan will for you. When a bird flies, it comes and goes, but there are no traces. How can you look for stages on the dark path? So I'm quite sure that this is a reference to Dongshan, but I'm looking all through Dongshan's record. I can't find this place of the bird's track and the dark path. Does anyone happen to know about this?
Well, Taigen read a case in the AA Koroku on a short bit on the trace of birds.
Yeah.
That's the only other time I've heard.
I think Dongshan has this saying that, or this image, even really. It's not much to it, but just the birds, our practice is like following birds' tracks. And birds' tracks in the sky. And that's the dark path or the mysterious path. When a bird flies, it comes and goes, but there are no traces. How can you look for stages on this dark, mysterious path? The bird flying through the night sky. Blackbird singing and flying through the dead of night. Can't see anything, and yet it's total dynamic aliveness. Comes and goes. What do we say? The pure Dharmakaya neither appears nor disappears. Yet it's foul. Reveals coming and going. Is that how it goes? Yet the Buddha's true compassion, Dharmakaya reveals coming and going. The power of Buddha's great vows reveals coming and going. that pure Dharmakaya neither appears nor disappears, yet the power of Buddha's great vows reveals coming and going. Yeah, it's these two sides. There's no arising and ceasing in pure Dharmakaya, and yet that's expressed because of Buddha's compassionate vows to always remain on Vulture Peak and every other dwelling place to reveal to us the Dharma that we see coming and going. We see Shakyamuni Buddha born, live, and die. And we see all these ancestors coming and going. When a bird flies, it comes and goes, but there are no traces. So, like, if we look deeper to catch that bird, follow its traces and catch it. No. How can you look for stages on the dark path? That concludes the story of Qingyuan Xingsu, Seigen Gyoshi. This is, I feel happy to have begun Sesshin with this realm where there's no real practice to do, no stages. What is the price of rice in Lulin? Like village songs and festival drinking. This way of the peasants is so pure.
I don't do that.
I don't do that. We're not? This is not it? Would you like to sing a song?
No.
It feels to me like we're actually sometimes our practice feels like that to me, sitting here. It's a strange kind of festival drinking, a strange kind of village song. but this is kind of quiet celebration going on. Yes, Piotr?
It's a silly comment, but this question about the price of rice reminds me of when Reagan and Clinton were running against each other, and somebody asked Reagan the price of a half gallon of milk or a gallon of milk or something, and he totally couldn't answer it. And Clinton, won. It wasn't Reagan, it was somebody else. Who did he run against? First George Bush. Yeah.
What was the point?
George Bush. Well, just are you an ordinary person?
Oh.
Do you live in our world, or are you so out of our world that you have no idea what a gallon of milk costs?
Interesting.
And he couldn't do it. But Clinton named the price of a gallon of milk, and so he became the people's guy.
What a great commentary on that story. Yep. Yep. Just take care of the next thing. and hopefully enjoy it, but our enjoyment of this party, of this village festival, sometimes may be kind of rough. We're getting kind of pummeled around by our body and so on, sitting like this. But the dance, that village dance, is I picture singing and dancing all night in a circle dance around this campfire. The commentary even says something like beating sticks on rocks and things. Like, they don't even have like musical instruments, just very rough. But they're circling around this campfire. And the center of the campfire is very bright and clear. And if they go too close, they get too hot, And if they go too far away and they're circling dance, they get too cold, and the unknown dark night out there, so they just circle around this campfire, singing the same old village songs, year after year, day after day, drinking the same old homebrew. Tastes like old vinegar sometimes. So, you wouldn't really rather be doing anything else, would you? I didn't think so. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.